up online on our website if you want to list them. So I don't know everybody too well, so I'll say a little bit about myself before we start. I've been studying Buddhism about 9 years, and I started out finding Buddhism through yoga. At my teacher training, we went and did a retreat. For our final weekend, we went and did a retreat with Lama Maru, who's a Tibetan Buddhist monk. He's actually not a monk anymore. He's still a Tibetan teacher. But he's an amazing teacher. If you search him on Google, he has great, great podcasts available. And so I came to Buddhism through Lama Maru. And when I saw him, I remember I was sick. You've probably heard this story. And I didn't like him. I thought he was really annoying. Everybody was laughing at his jokes. I didn't think he was funny. But for some reason, the things he said made a lot of sense. And I went home and I practiced them. And that's when I started my meditation practice and all these different things. And then when I came, I still listened to him. And as I listened to him more and more over the years, I totally love him now. But it's a funny thing that you would follow and listen to someone who you really didn't like. But that's the thing with Dharma teachings. It's not the person, really, in a way, that's teaching the Dharma. It's being passed down from person to person all the way back to the Buddha. So everything we talk about is nothing that I made up, which is good, because if I've been studying for 9 years, and, you know, the Buddha studied for lifetimes, it's a lot better to have information from a verifiable lineage. And that's what we'll do in these classes. We'll go back and explain where all the information's coming from, so you know what we're talking about, where it came from. And then you can try it out in your own life and see if it makes sense to you, if it works for you, and if it feels right. And then I helped, well, I've been studying with Lama Ami, who started this center, for probably about 8 years, and she's been my main teacher. And then she taught all of these courses, and the way these courses are set up, if you want the course material, you can see Lauren, and she'll tell you the website to go to. So we're on, this is actually the 5th course, and we're going to go through 18 courses. So we'll be offering these courses on Wednesday nights for, it'll probably be like 2 or 3 more years, but we're going at a pretty good pace. So they're also standalone. You don't have to commit to any other ones. But if you want deeper study, which is what these are, you can do that in different ways. You can come to class, which is a good place to start. And then if you want, you can do the homework. There's quizzes and meditations. So they're there to help you bridge the gap between classes, especially if you need to miss a class, then you can find all the material online too. And then there's final, and after the 18 courses, there's kind of like a formal exam, public exam. Were you at the one when I did it? Were you there?
No.
Okay. So after those 18 courses, you do a public exam, like in front of you guys, and the audience asks the questions. Were you there for Ryan and Jason? Okay. So at that point, then you can teach these courses if you want. So there's a lot of background, but I think that mostly covers it. And this whole course will be on karma, although the way the courses are structured will go through a lot of the background information as well. So it's not as though every class is only going to be on karma per se. And by the end, you'll have a full knowledge of what karma means, and you'll be able to see how it's seemingly misused a lot. And then you'll have the wisdom to know the difference, to know that, oh, this is actually what this means, not that that means we have to correct people, but we just know in our heart, and then we can practice from a more enlightened place, really. Does anybody want to say, why don't we go around and introduce yourself and say what interests you about this course? If you have a burning question, you can bring it up and maybe we'll get to it today. Jenny, you want to start?
I'm Jenny, and I've been searching a lot spiritually over the last couple of years, but especially the last few months. And when I heard about this course, it just seemed to fit with where I've been in my own spiritual search. So that's the reason why I'm here.
Cool. Welcome.
I'm Brian. Nothing comes up right now.
Okay.
But I really feel drawn to this place and this space, and being in your presence during the CEV training was pretty cool. So once I heard about it, and it fits with my schedule, and just glad to be here.
Cool. Welcome.
Thank you.
You want to go next, Sheila?
I'm Sherry.
Sherry, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I said Sheila.
Sherry. You said Sherry the first time.
No, I did.
Didn't.
Okay.
I was here.
Okay.
I'm here for, I'm just going to say, for very personal reasons. Not a secret or anything. You would just probably take up tonight and the next week. Explain it. And honestly, this came up in my Facebook feed. For no reason whatsoever.
Same here.
And it's kind of like it was just sort of meant to be. And I know it was because of things that have happened before. And so, yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
I'm Heather. Awesome. And with karma, I just like the idea of having control of your actions and how that leads to other things in your life, and I like the idea of planting good seeds, so I just want to learn more.
Okay, cool. Hello.
I'm Nikki, and I'm here because I'm very curious about what karma means from a Buddhist perspective. I don't know anything about it, but I often question why certain people are born in certain conditions, why some people are less fortunate or perceived to be more less fortunate than others. And so I'm just kind of curious from Buddhist perspective how that works and how we can make better life on the personal level.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks.
Gail, and I just read Buddhist principles over the years, and I thought it's interesting, so I thought I'd check it out.
Nice. Okay.
My name's Amanda. I've taken some classes here before, and I found them to be very interesting. I started at the beginning of this year practicing meditation and yoga, and I'm very interested in Buddhism, and I've been attending the Shambhala Center in Davis, and I like coming here, and I just thought this class sounded interesting.
Cool. Hi, Belinda. Do you want to go, or just saying your name and then why you're interested in this class?
Cool. I'm Belinda. I've been taking courses with Heather, and this is the fourth course. Our fifth course.
My name is Lauren, and I've been taking all the courses too, and so this is my fifth course with Heather, and so taking all the courses and doing all the I've been doing all the homeworks and doing all the quizzes and the contemplations is just really helped my practice. And if you think like, oh, this little bit of meditation is like really changing my life. Actually, like, doing the material, for me at least, has really changed my life even more. So it just keeps me inspired to keep practicing. And so,
yeah. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Miriam. I just want to deepen my knowledge about Buddhism, and I think it's going to help me grow and be a better person.
I'm Carrie, and many years ago, a friend took the Karma class with a similar tradition, and she shared like bits and pieces of things that were different than what she would have thought were karma. So I thought it was interesting when she told me about it. So I was interested in coming here. I'm not usually available Wednesday nights, so I like that you were recording it. So if I won't be here again, I'll probably listen to it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Belinda said this would be a nice class, so I came. No, I mean, I think this is the best thing I can do with my time this evening, and to kind of open myself to receiving. I have some resistance to karma because I grew up with a negative association with karma in India, so, you know, but I'm open to taking in what I can.
Do you mind saying?
Oh, just that karma is used as a way to oppress people in India.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were born in the bad caste, it's your fault. And
so it's Hinduism, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't like karma, but I like how you guys present it. It's different, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know much about Hinduism. Is that how it's... I wouldn't imagine that's how it's taught.
It's
how it's practiced.
It's what people take and do with it. It's
really
convenient if you're born in another caste, you can oppress other people, seemingly sanctioned. Which is not the intention of the religion.
Right.
So,
yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, karma's... It's a very interesting subject, and it can be kind of explosive, too, because of what you're mentioning, which I kind of thought was just the way people who didn't understand karma started practicing it. Because I've seen it in myself and in a lot of people I've studied with. When we learn karma, we tend to start blaming other people for things or looking at other people and saying it's their fault. So it's kind of the natural tendency that I think comes up in humankind maybe then. But as we go through the course, I'll try to remind us to keep it as not a way of judging people. It's mainly meant for ourselves. To apply to ourselves and not to, as a way to, you know, separate us from others, which I think all of us probably know isn't the point of Buddhism. If we're familiar with the Dalai Lama, you know, he says his religion is kindness, which that is not an easy thing. It's not easy because we have things that come up, you know, like frustrations, we have anger that comes up. It's not easy to be kind. If we're having a great day and everything's perfect, then yeah. But the real test is when we have difficulties and it's not easy, then what can we do in those instances? And that's where these teachings can help us, because it's like the Cultivating Emotional Balance course, if you attended that, most of you did, because we're learning more about the system and how things work. In one way, through psychology, and now through Buddhism. So we become more familiar with, like, the mechanism or, you know, the workings. And then we can recognize, oh, okay, this is this coming up. And that gives us a little distance between that split-second anger and saying something that's going to end a relationship of 20 years, where we can then step back and say, oh, at least pausing, oh, okay, I'm not going to say that right now. Or maybe starting to say it and stopping ourselves. So the ultimate goal of that would be we would see it come up and we wouldn't have to act on it. It's not always that we're choosing in the moment. You know, a lot of times it's we're thrown. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So... class is Karma, Creating Your Future, and it's Wednesday, March 29th. I've been saying this for every course, although I haven't been recording, so the reason I've been saying the date every course is for the recording, and now we're actually recording. Okay. This class, class one, is going to be an Abhidharma overview. Okay. So this is the first course that we're doing in Abhidharma in this progression of courses. And throughout the courses for you guys, we've done the higher Madhyamika school, the lower Madhyamika school, and the Sutras school. And these courses were all taught by a Tibetan Buddhist monk. And a lot of the things that I'll talk about are things that he talked about in the class. And they're about life in the monastery and that sort of thing, which is really cool to learn about. Because I've never lived in a monastery. I'm not a nun. I'm not going to be. So I don't have that kind of information to share. So what he talks about is that normally in the monastery, we wouldn't study this until our 15th or 16th year. It seems like a long time to go, right? Because karma and emptiness, which we'll study next course, are basically the heart of Buddhism. It's really where everything else comes from. So it can give you a sense of how powerful and also how deep and intricate the teachings on karma are. Although they can be explained very simply too, which is how these courses are presented. All right, we're going to study the fourth chapter, which is dedicated to karma. And we're going to go on to explain what Abhidharma is. Okay, quick overview of the course. First class, which is where we are, will be what Abhidharma is. And who's heard this word before?
Abhidharma?
Yeah. Okay. If you're around Buddhism and you go to other centers or take other courses, you'll hear this word a lot. And it's thrown around a lot, and mostly people don't know what it means. So it's really nice to have a course like this where we have the time and the space to go into each of these subjects. A lot of classes, if you're talking about karma in 2 hours, you just don't have the time. And those classes are very useful as well, but just different. The second class will be, what is karma? We've spoken about it before in different courses. And really how a movement of the mind is basically a kind of karma. And we'll go into that more. The third class are the different kinds of deeds and how does motivation affect it. Fourth is karma and what you get back from it. Basically the results.
Can we start with this one?
And we'll use Jetsun Kapa mostly and also refer to the first Dalai Lama. So what Dalai Lama are we on now? Does anybody know?
14.
Yep. So the 14th. So for this course, we'll be referring to the first Dalai Lama. And who knows who Jetsun Kapa is?
He's the founder of our lineage.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a picture of him?
Yeah, over there.
Yep. So he's basically where our direct lineage of Buddhism started. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a part of our direct lineage. He's also kind of the head of, you know, the Buddhist figurehead for a lot of just the umbrella of Buddhism. But the lineage that he studies is the same that we're teaching and studying here. Which I think is a good, you know, like a good reference. Okay. So the Abhidharma doesn't really explain how karma is carried with us until it comes back to us. The idea is you plant a seed, a karmic seed, and where does that go? It ripens at another time. It doesn't ripen immediately. So if we're planting a seed, how are we keeping it with us? How does it then come back? We're going to go over that. And as the Abhidharma doesn't really explain it so much, Jetsun Kapa presents a mind-only school idea of how karma is carried, which is, we're going to go over the schools in a minute, but there's our school, and basically the next school below is the mind-only school. Just different, slightly different views. Similar in a lot of ways, too. And this view in the mind-only school of how the karma is carried and stays with us is very, very useful. It's not necessarily the ultimate truth, but it's a really useful way to practice. And in our lineage, we study all of the different schools of Buddhism. We study all of the best commentaries on all of the subjects. We don't just stay within the Galupa or Madhyamika middle way school. We study them all. Okay, and it's important, I think, for us to hear a good explanation of how karma is carried with us. Otherwise, it's hard to accept. Or maybe we don't even think about it until it's brought up. But if we plant a karmic seed and then it ripens in the future, what's it doing in the meantime? Okay, five. Widespread mental afflictions. Who knows what a mental affliction is? Or who can make a guess? You want to, Belinda?
It's like an adverse emotion. Yeah, maladaptive maybe.
Yeah, like a moment of anger, or really it's anything that disrupts our peace of mind. Yeah. Six, what's the relation between karma and emptiness? Why does there have to be an emptiness for karma to work? And my thought on why we do the course on karma before we do the course on emptiness, because karma grounds us more in a way. It's how things do exist. Emptiness is not what we think it is. In our culture, empty is like when there's nothing in here, basically. Which in a way that's true, but emptiness is just, you could say, a lack of self-existence. It's not that nothing's there. That is completely the wrong idea. But we'll tend to go to one extreme or the other. We'll just flip-flop back and forth, mostly through our whole Buddhist career, until we start to get more and more refined, and then the flip-flopping shorter and shorter together, and then we get grounded in a more realistic idea of it. At least that's been my experience, and that's what other people seem to experience. So you can notice if that happens in your practice too. Okay, we're talking about the relation between karma and emptiness in class 6, because Jetsongkhapa, which is who?
The founder of Lama.
Yes. Was fanatic about the fact that karma and emptiness are interrelated. This isn't a normal idea that you'll hear throughout Buddhism. It's something that, not that it's not there, but it's not a focus. It's something that is original or, I don't know if that's the right word, but whatever. Original to Jetsongkhapa and this particular lineage, that combination of those two things. And it's a nice thing, I think, because it's kind of like a seatbelt. It protects us from flying off one way or the other. So thinking that everything is exactly the way it looks, or the other extreme, nothing exists. Both of those are not correct. All right, and 7 is about black karma, white karma, path of karma, and path of action. We'll go over the 10 non-virtues. Class 8, there's a concept called most basic virtue, and it refers to the storehouse of seeds in our consciousness. And this class is really, really cool because it's a way through mistaken actions. where we can destroy those seeds. It's basically, we can purify all these seeds too, which is incredible good news. Okay, so we'll get into that. 9 is the 5 immediate misdeeds, which is after we commit one of those deeds, and if we leave it unconfessed or unpurified, if we die, then we go to one of the lowest hell realms. One of those misdeeds is the idea of a schism. Does anyone know what that means, that word?
Schism, separation?
Mm-hmm.
Divide?
Yep. And it's the idea of one of the 5 serious misdeeds is creating a schism in the Sangha, or splitting up the Sangha. Who knows what the Sangha is?
Community.
Mm-hmm. Like your spiritual community, all of us in this room. And technically, we can't fully do this misdeed because the technical misdeed is that the split would have to be done in the time of the Buddha. So these sound really serious, these 5 immediate misdeeds, but some of them we can't totally do. So they are serious and we don't want to do them, but this one we're not capable of doing, which is a really great thing. Okay, and then 10... what bad deeds are more serious than others? And what good deeds are good? All right.
Can I ask a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not quick, just tell me later.
Okay.
What do you mean when you say emptiness? What are you referring? Like what type of emptiness? Like, is there a brief answer to that?
Basically, you could say, you could describe it as a lack of self-existence.
Ego, maybe?
A lack of ego? You could say that, like, as in the self is empty of existing the way we think it does, which doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right.
It just exists in a different way than we think it does. That's kind of the idea of emptiness. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay. Okay. Now, Abhidharma. So say Abhidharma Kosha.
Abhidharma,
Abhidharma
Kosha.
Kosha. Abhidharma Kosha.
Abhidharma Kosha.
And this is by Master Vasubandhu. Say Vasubandhu.
Vasubandhu.
And the Tibetan of his name, or his Tibetan name, is Lopan Kiknyen. So say Lopan.
Lopan.
Kiknyen.
Kiknyen.
And then the Sanskrit of the Abhidharma Kosha, that's kind of a repeat, but it's the same thing, Abhidharma Kosha. And then the Tibetan of Abhidharma Kosha, say Nyingpa, Chu, Zu. Nyingpa, Chu, Zu.
Nyingpa, Chu, Zu.
All right. So the Abhidharma was one of the first forms of Buddhism to come to India. And why are we talking about the Abhidharma? Does anyone remember? Because we're going to be studying one of the chapters, which is on karma. So that's where the information that we're studying is coming from. So you know where the information is coming from. It's not something that someone recently just came up with on their own. You know, it's been tested generation after generation after generation. And usually when something lasts around, you know, 2,500 years, something like that, it works. That's why it's being passed down. That's why it's surviving. If it's something that doesn't work, it usually dies out after, you know, maybe a few generations. After people realize, oh, this isn't working. Why would I do this if it doesn't work for me? And so Abhidharma is considered to be part of Hinayana. Some people call this Theravadin. Are people familiar with these words? So it's basically, you can call it the lower vehicle, the foundational vehicle, I think I've heard it called. It's a different kind of branch of Buddhism, a different set of ideas and not completely different, but a different focus. So some people... Oh, no, never mind. Okay, so this is considered to be part of Hinayana, or Theravada, and it's mainly of the Vaibhashika, or Detailist school. So the main book for study of Abhidharma is the Abhidharma Kosha, which is where this information is coming from that we're going to be reviewing. And it's by Master Vasu Bandhu. And the main book that all the scholars use I already said that. Okay, so Tibetans were fanatical about translating every single syllable, and that's why Tibetan Buddhism is famous for being really accurate. I hadn't heard this before, and I find this very comforting. And you'll see as we study Tibetan Buddhism more and you get more familiar with it, it is very detailed. And it's nice because you know that nothing's being lost. Like, I'm going to be teaching everything that is in this course, whether I feel like teaching it or not. I'm not deciding to leave some things out and put some things in because I think you'll like this and not like that. I'm just teaching the whole path, whether or not I resonate with that particular part at this point or not. So it's a nice thing about having courses like this. You're getting everything, not just a few key pieces. So you can have a full look at it. You know what everything's about, and then you can pick what parts you're going to practice first and then come back to others. So you don't have to accept it all at face value, or when you first hear it, you should test it and think about it, practice it yourself, talk about it with people, you know, work with it and mold it into a practice that you can actually use in your life. That's what it's meant to be for. Okay, so I think maybe two of you will know this answer, but who is Master Vasu Bandhu's half-brother? It's a hard question.
Master
Asanga. Yep, Master Asanga. Okay, and the story of Master Vasu Bandhu, which is who?
The author of the book.
Yep. Is that his mother was a nun, and she saw that if she had children... This was in a time when Buddhism was declining, that they would become great Buddhist scholars. So she decided to disrobe. That's not meant to be figurative. But she decided to disrobe, and she had one son with a king and one with a Brahmin. And those two became the greatest scholars of Buddhism ever, if you don't include Master Nagarjuna and Jetsongkhapa. Master Asanga, who is Master Vasu Bandhu's half-brother, he wrote the five great books of Maitreya that were dictated to him from Maitreya himself, who is also a Buddha. He'll be the coming Buddha who will come next. And then Master Vasu Bandhu is responsible for the Abhidharma. And so the Abhidharma is a Hinayana text, which is not the school that we're studying or that we live in. So does that make Master Vasu Bandhu a Hinayana follower? Is he not a Galupa practitioner? And the answer is no. This is what Geshe Michael says in the class. But he wrote the book about Hinayana. And he thinks that Master Vasu Bandhu actually wrote this book as a purification because he had dissed this school. He had said something negative about them. And then he wrote this huge, huge text from that school, like for that school. And there's a good lesson in there because there's a tendency to, which seems silly, I think, at a certain point, but the more you get into Buddhism and in a way become more attached to a certain way of viewing things, it can be easy to diss the way other schools are practicing. And we may, I think it's kind of a natural progression through a spiritual practice. But if that happens and then it loosens up and it lets go, that's a good thing. But all of the different ideas, all the different schools are completely valid. They were all taught by the Buddha. And it's just like in Christianity, I'm not that familiar with other religions, but there's so many different, you could call them schools of Christianity. And that's a great thing because people are attracted to different things. And it's not that only one of those is valid and works. And that's the same thing with Buddhism. All of the schools of Buddhism are helpful and really amazing for particular people. Okay. So Master Vasubandhu, he actually wrote great Mahayana texts as well, which is the school that we study in. This is taking longer than I thought it would. Okay, so we're studying Abhidharma Kosha, so maybe we should know what Abhidharma means. Abhi means up to or approaching, or just about to reach something. Who knows? Well, I'll just say. Dharma comes from a root in Sanskrit, which is dur, and it means to hold something or teach something. So the main meaning of dharma is any existing object. Teaching dharma is called that because it holds you from going to the lower realms. It's keeping you out of the door to the lower realms. The highest dharma is Buddha and Buddhahood. Okay, that's the highest dharma in the middle way school. The highest dharma in the Hinayana system, which is what we're going through this course, is what? I know one of you guys know. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between nirvana and enlightenment. Nirvana is the permanent cessation of mental afflictions. Technically, it's said based on the individual analysis, which is an experience in meditation where you see how the world is truly working. So that's one goal of the Hinayana school, nirvana. Enlightenment would be Buddhahood, where you would... basic difference is bodhicitta. To reach Buddhahood, you've had this burning desire to get out of suffering so that you can truly help other beings do the same. That's the difference. Enlightenment, you reach there with the goal to help other beings. Nirvana, you reach there mostly for yourself. And that can sound really wrong, but I've heard explanations from people where it makes sense to me how someone could just want that. It might be too much to think about all beings. I've also heard that that you know they just don't know that it's possible to reach Buddhahood, that sort of thing. Okay. So what Abhidharma means is up to Nirvana, because we're in the Hinayana school in this course. So it's referring to the final goal in the Hinayana school, which would be Nirvana. So as we're talking, not to get confused, because we may say enlightenment sometimes just slipping up. Okay. So it refers to what takes you up to Nirvana. What's the main thing that you need to reach Nirvana? I just said it mostly.
The direct perception of emptiness?
Yep. And to have that, you need to have wisdom and understanding of emptiness, which is what we gain by sitting through classes like this and hearing about emptiness or karma over and over and over and over. And the amazing thing with the teachings is that we hear them over and over, and each time we hear something different and we learn something different. They don't ever get stale or old. It's not it's not like a movie that we've seen once and then we see it again and we're like, you know, I've seen this, there's nothing really here for me. The teachings we go back to over and over and over, and there's all these different layers that we're learning at a deeper level each time we come back to it. So it's good to hear them over and over too. Okay. Basically, Abhidharma means wisdom or emptiness. And then in the Hinayana school, you'll just about never hear it called emptiness. They use the word selflessness. Okay. And then kosha means treasure or treasure house. Really, all these texts have the coolest names. They're beautiful. Okay, so why do they call Master Vasubandhu's book a kosha, which is treasure or treasure house? Because he stuffed into it all the great jewels. There's 7 original books on Abhidharma, and all of them were spoken by the first disciples of the Buddha. And of these 7 great books, we actually don't even have all of them now. But originally, it's the idea that they were collected and put into a treasure house. I'm going to skip a few things. Okay, so in the monastery and among Buddhist scholars, there's a big fight whether the Buddha spoke Abhidharma directly. And you can read it in the reading that's online. And the side that we come down on is, yes, he did speak it directly. That's where all of these courses came from. He spoke the teachings directly. His disciples wrote it down. And then down the road, thankfully, Master Vasubandhu came, compiled everything, and put it into a version what we can understand, that we can study. Almost. So we're going to be studying a commentary on his compilation. So what's the reason? Does anybody have an idea why we wouldn't study directly from Lord Buddha, what he said directly? Has anyone ever read any of the scriptures that are directly Lord Buddha's words? So if we can think back 2,500 years ago and someone explaining these ideas to us from that time, most of these ideas are confusing enough when they're explained to us by someone from our own culture and our own time. So if they're explained to us by an enlightened being, well, we could argue that, but if they were explained to us by Lord Buddha in that time, there's all these different references that we would have no idea what he's talking about. Plus, he's an enlightened being. And so he doesn't go through and explain everything. He would mention karma or mention the 4 laws of karma, and that would be it. There wouldn't be an explanation. There wouldn't be anything else to it. So we need someone to unpack it for us, someone to explain it to us in a way that we can understand. And so that's why we don't study the Buddha's words directly. All of the sutra that was written down by his students, we wouldn't understand it. Even in the readings, the commentaries on the commentary on the commentary, it's still really hard to understand. So it's a great kindness that there's other people who came along and explained it in a way that we can actually grasp it more. Okay, next slide. We're going to go for 5 more minutes, and then we'll take a break. Okay, this is kind of what we were talking about. We'll just go over this really quickly. And I actually never separated these out. These are the different schools that we're talking about. Okay, so it's confusing because when people say, when they say school, it could either be Tibetan schools, which we're studying Tibetan Buddhism. There's different schools within Tibetan Buddhism. Or it could be Indian schools overall, the whole category of Buddhism. So the Tibetan schools say Sakya, Gelugpa, Nyingma, and Kagyu. So out of the Tibetan schools, does anyone remember which one we are? Yep, we're number two. Okay, so then there's these other schools that are under Tibetan schools. And then it's like the broader category of Indian schools. There's Detailist, so say Vaibhashika. There's Sutrist, say Sautantrika. There's Mind Only, say Chittamatra. And then there's Middle Way, say Madhyamika. So which one do we fit in of the Indian schools? Madhyamika, yeah. And then Tibetan, all those Tibetan schools are all Madhyamika. So it's confusing. And the longer you study, you'll hear people throwing around these words, and it's very hard to remember, I think. There's so many different words, and they don't really mean anything to us unless we speak Tibetan or Sanskrit. So when we're talking about four schools, we're not talking about the four Tibetan schools. Those started about 1,200 years ago. We're talking about the four early great schools, which are the Indian schools. So the first one, Vaibhashika, or Detailist. We'll just call it Detailist, that's the English. They're called the Detailist because there's this old book, and it's called The Explanation in Detail, and they love that book. They study that book a lot, so they're called the Detailists. The second is called the Sutrist. So Sautantrika means Sutrist. Who knows what sutra is? Yeah.
The words spoken by the Buddha? Oh.
Yep. So the Sautantrika school, if they're called the Sutra school, what do you imagine that they study?
The Sutras.
Yep. They don't think any of the commentaries are as good as the words of the Buddha. They just study that. Which sounds really hard to me, actually. Because of words, you know, reasons that we were just discussing. Okay, then the third school, Mind Only, it's a little misleading because do they believe that there's only mind? No, they don't believe that. Not really. And we're going to talk about that in this course too. The fourth school is Middle Way or Madhyamika. The four schools were all actually designed by the Buddha. So when you see explanations by Western scholars sometimes, they may say that other schools were made up, but this isn't the case. They were all taught by Lord Buddha when he was here on this planet teaching. So why would he have taught four different truths? Just in general, why would someone, maybe you can think of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He teaches to all different groups all over the world, all different groups of people. And from what I've heard, he's very different when he's teaching monks as opposed to when he's teaching in a stadium to a bunch of Americans. So why would he probably teaches different things and at a different level and in a different way, I would imagine. Why would he do that? Why would he teach different things to different people? Yep, cultures are different.
It's a different kind of learning and different kinds of students too.
So it's out of kindness for the students, which is what all Buddhist practitioners are encouraged to practice as well. You don't try to push someone past where they're ready to go. You don't tell them something that's going to freak them out, and then they're never going to want to study any spiritual path again. Something like that. You have enough wisdom to know, okay, this is what I'm going to teach them is not untrue. It's not that the Buddha lied sometimes and told the truth sometimes. It's not that His Holiness the Dalai Lama does that. It's just teaching to your audience. What's going to be helpful for these people right now? And to me, that really sounded like lying for a long time. But it took me a long time to realize that it's not. Because when I first started practicing, I tried to be like what I thought of as being really truthful, which ends up just being harmful to people sometimes. I would just say the ultimate truth that I knew, the highest truth, all the time, as opposed to what's helpful to somebody. I know. So it's just about, I think it boils down to just kindness, caring for another person, and thinking, oh, I have this jewel, like we're talking about, Kosha is the treasure house. I have this jewel of knowledge, this jewel of wisdom, that might be really helpful to them right now. And, you know, I have this other jewel that I think is really good and I think is better, but I don't think it's going to help them. So it's just, and you know, sometimes we're wrong, but we do our best and try to offer the right teaching at the right time. So if His Holiness taught, I've seen Him teaching in smaller audiences and when He's just talking one-on-one, and He can be really fierce too, which I think is really cool. It's a great, great trait of a good teacher. They can have all these different modes of being. And it's not that any one of them is untrue. They're able to be whatever a student needs in that moment. They're not worried about whether someone likes them or doesn't like them. They're not worried about pleasing everybody. They're worried about helping everybody get out of suffering. So it's the same thing with our teachers that we have here. Same thing with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. The same thing that the Buddha did when he taught these four different schools that do teach very different things. Okay, let me see if there's anything else on this before we take our break. Okay, I think we already said that. Okay, let's take a 5-minute break.